Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhakti Vaibhava ki, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giridas Maharaj ki, Jaya Nitai Gopremanande. Just put something under the Bhagavatam.
Just put Japa here, sorry.
Yeah, no, but still. Can't touch the point. Even yours, Sacha. Bhagavatam's too close to the ground. Has to be more. Yeah, even that book shouldn't be on the ground. Put something under it, jumper or something. Yeah, bag or something. Okay, so what did we discuss last week?
So we did the angle of the devotee, that by devotion itself we can take direct shelter of Krishna, who is sitting in everybody's heart.
Any other points?
Only Krishna can instruct Maya to release us. Krishna keeps giving us tests to test our conviction. However, Krishna doesn't give tests which we cannot pass. So when we get criticized and all, these are tests which actually Krishna has given, but we should pass the test by not responding and humbly accepting that somebody's criticizing us.
Any other points?
The karmas are attached to too many ritualistic performances, whereas the devotee is basically, our devotee must be disciplined, which is what following the rules and regulations, and give an example of Raghunathas Goswami, which is mentioned in the
Any other points?
We just described how dangerous is one association from another. The dangerous, the outside that to associate with a woman is quite dangerous, and more dangerous than that is to associate with the persons. So, attachment to a woman. More dangerous than that is the attachment to a Mayavadi.
Any other points? So we're getting near the end of the third canto now. So this final section in the beginning of chapter 29, Devahuti, she asks three questions to Kapila Dev. What are those three questions?
Explain the path of devotional service.
Explain about devotional service. Yeah.
Explain the miseries of benefit of birth and death.
Yeah, miseries of birth and death.
And the influence of time factor.
Yeah, and how does the time factor influence us? So then, the remainder of the third canto is the answer to these three questions. So in chapter 29, Kapila Muni describes devotional service, first mixed devotional service and then pure devotional service. And there's a very important chapter in the Bhagavatam. It has to be studied very carefully. And you'll be examined carefully on this chapter also in the next few weeks. And then in chapter 30, is it entitled? Description of the adverse fruitive activities. So it describes the living entity who is engaged in vikarma or ugrakarma, very sinful activities. And by being engaged in those sinful activities, the living entity is dragged downwards into hellish regions by the attendants of Yamaraj, the Yamadutas. And he has to suffer various hellish punishments for his hellish activities. So this describes the Devahuti's second question, which is, please describe the description of the suffering of birth and death. And how when the living entity acts sinfully, he goes through hellish births and suffering within this material world. Then chapter 31 is called? The movement of the living entities. Yeah, so the living entity is then born back into a human womb. And when he comes back into the womb of a human mother, then the living entity goes through the suffering within the womb. And then eventually some of the living entities they pray to the Lord for emancipation, or they repent for their mistake and they want to rectify their suffering condition and engage in the Lord's service once again. So pious living entities or devotees, then they pray in this way. Mm. And then the living entity comes out, goes through so much suffering as a baby, and then turns into a boy, and then a youth, goes through so many different sufferings, and the end of the chapter describes then he comes to adolescence and is overcome by sex desire, which means he becomes very materially bound by attraction to the opposite sex. And Kapila Dev describes that this is the binding factor in the material world. This is the way that the living entity is captured by the material energy within this material world, by the attraction between the opposite sex. Like that. Then, chapter 32 describes
entanglement
and fruitive activities. So, this describes, this is the answer to Devahuti's third question. Please describe about the time factor and how the time factor influences us. That sometimes we are born into, due to piety, we're born into materially beneficial circumstances. And those materially beneficial circumstances means living entity can enjoy. But factually speaking, Kapila Dev explains that actually, no matter what birth you take within this material world, actually it is all suffering. So even if you go into a hellish birth, or you perform pious activity, but still you get bound by attachment to the material energy. So regardless of whether one is performing sinful activities or pious activities, one is bound within this material world, and one is not really in a better situation either way. Of course, you can say by performing pious activities it's better in some ways. But factually speaking, you're within the material world, so you're bound by the material energy. So that leads us up to where we are now. And now, Lord Kapila will describe tonight, we'll go through verses 22 to 33. Now, in this section, beginning from verse 22 to 26, Lord Kapila Dev describes, he summarizes the teachings of, he just summarizes his teachings so far. Mm-hmm. Which means Lord Kapila's philosophy is called
Sankhya Yoga.
And after speaking since chapter 25 and describing Sankhya Yoga, now he summarizes what is the result that one should attain by following these teachings, by realizing these teachings. If one has realized everything which Lord Kapila Dev has taught, then what will be the result in one's consciousness? So from verses 22 to 26, this will be discussed. And then from 27 onwards, we'll go up to 33 tonight, but from 27 onwards, then Lord Kapila further describes, he summarizes the different types of yoga practices, which he has described, Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, like that. So first we'll go through verses 22 to 26 and we'll see a summary of his teachings thus far and what is the result of following these teachings. Well, that's it. Any questions, comments? Okay.
What pious activities leads one to the heavenly planets?
Takes one to the heavenly planets? Any pious activity. I mean, not any pious activity, especially regulated Vedic activity, such as giving charity, performing jagya, performing tapasya, all these types of things. Anything which is considered to be punya or piety, according to the Vedic standard, then that will elevate one to the heavenly planets. Prabhupada says that the very pious Christians, they can also go to the heavenly planets. People who follow regulations of Shastra, and by following that regulation and performing pious works, but on the material platform, they go to the heavenly planets. That's the result.
Because my understanding was by performing the pious activities, you get the opulent birth, you get the good education, the beauty, and if you, you're blessed with opulent wealth, then what is the path that can be, that takes you beyond this planet onto the heavenly planets?
It's the same thing. It just means that you perform more of the pious activities like that, because it just means you get more wealth, you get more material facility to enjoy. So the more one performs pious activities, then the higher he can be elevated like that. Even amongst the heavenly planets, there are different heavenly planets. And Indraloka is considered to be very opulent like that. So.
So if you worship a particular demigod, then you may go to that demigod's planet. That is one of the heavenly planets in India. So somebody is a very devout devotee of Lord Ramakrishna or any other demigod, there are chances they may go to that planet. No?
Yeah, that's what, as Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita. Okay, text 22. My dear mother, I therefore advise you to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for His lotus feet are worth worshipping. Accept this with all devotion and love, for thus you can be situated in transcendental devotional service. So, in summarizing his teachings, then, Lord Kapiladev is pointing us towards Bhakti Yoga. And by performing Bhakti Yoga, you worship Bhagavan. By performing Jnana Yoga, then you aim towards realizing Brahman. And by performing Jnana Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga, you aim towards realizing Paramatma. But Lord Kapiladev is advising that we perform Bhakti Yoga, because by performing Bhakti Yoga, then one realizes Bhagavan. He has complete realization of God. And this is the teachings of Lord Kapiladev. He teaches us to come to this. And this is what this section of the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us. And Prabhupada will summarize this tonight also. That Jnana Yoga, study of knowledge, is meant to lead to realization of Bhagavan. Vasudeva Savam Iti Samahatma Sadurlabha. Right? It is meant to bring us to understanding Vasudev or Krishna. That is the point of knowledge. If you study and study and study, but you don't become a devotee, then what is the point of that study? And knowledge only becomes realized by application of knowledge. No use just becoming learned. Just like some devotees, they may learn the Shastra so nicely, they can quote so many shlokas, they can tell all the pastimes, they know all the intricacies, they can memorize so many things. But when someone says, can you please sweep the temple room floor? Right? Then they feel, no, this is below me or like that. Then this is not practical application of knowledge. What is the point of having so much knowledge about Krishna if you're not developing bhakti or devotion towards Krishna? The end of knowledge is service. That is the point. It is not that in the spiritual world everyone is concerned with knowledge. You don't go to the spiritual world and just study. The gopis do not sit around in the corner, you know, with their Bhagavatams and, you know, having their study groups and giving oral presentations to each other. The gopis are beyond this. They've realized the perfection of knowledge. What is the perfection of knowledge? The perfection of knowledge is service to Krishna. That is the point. If you have knowledge, then you must serve. That is the realization of the knowledge. And knowledge only becomes realized when it is applied. In other words, you can be very learned, but if you don't do anything, you won't get realization about Krishna. You can understand by knowledge that Krishna is Satchit Ananda Vigraha, that Krishna is the embodiment of eternality, knowledge and bliss. But if you don't do service to Him, how can you realize Him? How will you ever meet Him face to face? It's not enough to just have knowledge of Krishna, but one must practically apply that knowledge. And that practical application of knowledge means service. So this is what Lord Kapila is teaching. This is what the Sankhya Yoga system is teaching. It's teaching Bhakti Yoga. Prabhupada says this in chapter 25 at the beginning. Sankhya Yoga and Bhakti Yoga are the same. It is the same thing. Prabhupada has already established that. The goal of both is the same. Actually, Sankhya Yoga means Bhakti Yoga. Prabhupada explains that. Because the whole point of the study is to then serve Krishna, is to develop bhakti or devotion towards Krishna. All the analysis, all the everything, is simply an impetus to surrender to Krishna, like that. So, Prabhupada says on the second paragraph, he says that devotional service should be executed in ecstasy. What is the Sanskrit which describes this in the verse? What's that?
Sarvabhavina.
Yeah, that means bhava. That devotional service must culminate ultimately in bhava. Bhava means?
Pure love.
Yeah, love. Ecstasy. What was that?
Feelings,
yeah, like that. Bhav means like the emotions, like that. It must come to the point where one actually has feeling for Krishna, deep attachment to Krishna, emotion to Krishna, spontaneous attachment to Krishna, awakening of love for Krishna, based upon one's heart being purified and one's heart being developing transcendental feelings towards Krishna in a particular type of rasa. In a particular type of relationship with Krishna. This is called bhava bhakti. Right? Rupa Goswami describes there is sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti. So when one develops bhava bhakti, it means one has to develop an attachment to Krishna, particular feelings. This will lead to
prema.
It will lead to being situated on the transcendental platform. It means that you will actually enter into Krishna's pastimes. If you have no attachment to Krishna, then you cannot enter into the pastimes. Right? If you do not desire to serve Krishna in a particular rasa, then you cannot enter into the pastimes. So this is the teaching of Kapiladev. So Prabhupada says, because Lord Kapiladev has said bhava, he's speaking about transcendental ecstatic devotional service. It is not ordinary devotional service. Right, it's not ordinary bhakti, sadhana bhakti. He's talking about bhava bhakti. This is he's summarizing his teachings. You must come to the platform of bhava. You must come to the platform of loving Krishna. That is the goal of Krishna consciousness. Then, in the third paragraph, Lord Kapila says that devotional service allows us to attain to the ultimate perfection because it is nirguna. No? Because in the Sanskrit, what is the Sanskrit which is used?
Tadguna Shraya.
Yeah, Tadguna Shraya. Which means it is beyond the effects of the gunas. So, devotional service is beyond the effects of the gunas. We may not be beyond the effects of the gunas, but devotional service is beyond the effects of the gunas. Right? Because devotional service is transcendental. Just like if you offer Krishna a flower, that activity is transcendental. It is bhakti. It is devotional service. Your consciousness may not be pure. It may not be transcendental. But the activity itself is transcendental. So therefore, by doing that activity, which is authorized by Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, then you can become realized. You can purify your consciousness. So devotional service on the Nirguna platform, and because Krishna is on the Nirguna platform, which means Krishna is also Nirguna, which means he's beyond the three modes of material nature, he can only be properly approached by Bhakti Yoga, which is beyond the modes of material nature. You cannot fully realize Krishna by jhana, the yoga, the mechanical process of approaching him, or by mental speculation, by jnana. One can only approach him or understand him by bhakti, because he is transcendental, therefore you need a transcendental process to approach him. If you try to use your own limited faculty, which is given to you by the modes of material nature, then you can't realize him because he's beyond the modes of material nature. So Krishna can only be realized by performing devotional service, which is beyond the modes of material nature. And Prabhupada says at the end of the purport, he says, by doing devotional service, all material and spiritual prosperity, Prabhupada says in the last line, by taking shelter under the lotus feet of Krishna, one is endowed with both kinds of prosperity, material and spiritual. Why then should one go to any demigod? So you get everything by serving Krishna. Material opulence, spiritual opulence. Everything is given. Therefore, akama, sava, kama, va, moksha, kama, udara, di. No matter what you want, go to Krishna. Right? Because you attain everything by worshipping Krishna. And everything is automatically given by worshipping Krishna. One doesn't even have to endeavor separately. You just worship Krishna, automatically all your material necessities will be taken care of. Because you're serving Krishna, he'll take care of everything. But he'll give you much more. He'll give you spiritual opulence. He will give you liberation into Vaikuntha. Right there. Any questions or comments so far?
Yes, sir. So far we have understood that the material progress and the spiritual progress one hold in parallel. So we understand that now the material goes down and transferring attention goes around. So how to understand this? That, we tend to think that now we're using it as we want to achieve both the tendency to think, but so far we have learned that it's not possible.
Because it means the devotee is not attached to those things. And because the devotee is concerned with serving Krishna, and then Krishna will give other things, such as material opulence. But the devotee is not attached to having those things. That's the point.
What we had to give up. The part of that renounce the kingdom. And so Prutta Maharaj had to renounce everything. Krishna has to renounce it. So it means that if the kingdom could not keep it together in parallel. Isn't it?
Yeah. I mean eventually you have to renounce everything at the time of death, that's true. But Prabhupada is making the point here in the purport that you get everything material and spiritual. Devotees experience that. They always have enough materially. And we always have spiritually, we get so much benefit by worshipping Krishna. That's what Prabhupada is establishing. Does that make sense?
Usually we have to give up things to attach to them, but we have to give up actually the sense of attachment to the things, not the actual material things. We can use everything in service of Krishna, that's properly because they like it.
When a person is getting into devotional service, then obviously he tries to he may go to the demigods or something for material opulence and all that. But what Krishna is trying to explain up here is whether you want spiritual and material. Initial stages are you can come to me directly, and the example that Prabhu gave is going through Dhruva Maharaj said he got the material opulence, but in the end he realized this is not what I really want. So at the advanced stage, I suppose when the devotee goes into the advanced stage, like you said, it's immaterial whether they actually have the opulence still. For them, it's renounced, I suppose.
Yeah, Mahaprabhu says, Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kavitam ba jagad isha kamaye. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes commenting on this verse of Shikshastika. He says that a devotee may have everything material, but he is not attached to it. Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim. Not that he does not have these things, but he does not have the attachment to these things. That is the point. So a devotee may be given so much material facility in Krishna's service, but he's not actually attached to the material facility. That's not his motivation for serving Krishna. But Krishna will give those things if he chooses to the devotee.
Well, we've been seeing the life of Srila Prabhupada. He was served in a very opulent manner by his disciples all over the world. The house folks would come to them for to give him up. He would be given accommodation in grand hotels. And he was virtually having all the opulences that a rich man would have.
But he wasn't attached to it. That's the point. He was staying in Bombay in one very wealthy life member's house, and then after Bombay he went to Mayapur, and in Mayapur he was staying in a little thatched hut, which you would see at the beginning of the property when you go on the main gate on the left. Prabhupada's hut is there. That's the hut that Prabhupada stayed in. And when Prabhupada was in the hut, he arrived at the hut after staying in life member in Bombay at a very opulent like palace. Then Prabhupada said, this is much nicer. This is sattva gun. It is mode of goodness. He said, this is much nicer. This is Brahminical life. Not that. So even though the devotee may be given so much opulence by Krishna, but he's not attached to that opulence. That's the point. Okay.
Is it okay to encourage them then that, you know, instead of praying to any like in India, family members are very big demigod worshippers also. And they are worshipping demigods for some material benefits only, like Saraswati for education and, like, you know, Lakshmi for money. So is it okay to encourage them that whatever is your motive to worship Krishna?
Yeah. I'm better. We preach to people to give up their material attachments. No, we preach like that. We say this is the standard, but if you cannot do it, then at least go to Krishna. But we don't like misrepresent the philosophy or water down the process. We say no, this is the standard, but if you're attached, okay, then at least go to Krishna. Akama sava kama. Even if you have all these desires, but at least go to Krishna to fulfill them. That's the purport. But we don't preach like that. We preach to people to give up their material desires, to become detached. Everything is temporary, so why be attached? But if you are attached, okay, then go to Krishna. That's the point.
Then we can say also four types of pious men that actually go. One is really inquiring about work. Krishna is saying that in chapter 7, so obviously.
Yeah, but then he says in the next verse, the best is the jnani. Yeah. Like that. So Krishna himself says, he doesn't stop and say,
yeah.
You know. It's a problem in India, they just quote one part of what Krishna says. And they don't quote the next verse or the second half of the verse. Or Krishna says, do your work. But then the next line he says, did not be attached to the results and offer the results to me, like that. But they don't quote everything. They just quote the parts which are suitable. Engagement in Krishna consciousness and application of devotional service unto Krishna make it possible to advance in knowledge and detachment as well as in self-realization. So do you recognize the Sanskrit?
Yes.
Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayat Yashu Vairagyam Jnanam Yad Brahma Darshanam. Almost the same as 127. So this is Kapila Devi summarizing all of his teachings. So he is teaching the same as what his teachings are the Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada has pointed out that second chapter of the Bhagavatam, the first canto, Prabhupada says we should memorize that entire chapter. It is so important. That is the underpinning of the entire Bhagavatam. The whole philosophy of the Bhagavatam is based upon that, the teachings in that second chapter, like that. So, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janaya Yashu Vairagyam Jnanam, and then Brahma Darshanam. So, Lord Kapila Dev is teaching us, when we perform unflinching bhakti, it must become, it is not talking once again, the type of devotional service he's speaking about is not ordinary mundane devotional service. It is not a low level, it is a very high level, a very exalted level, an advanced level, a serious level. Tivrena, I mean serious with focus, is that type of devotional service. So this devotional service, if performed in that way, then automatically one will become detached. And automatically one gains knowledge. And one gains realization of knowledge. This comes by devotional service, automatically. You'll see that some devotees, they're performing devotional service but still very materially attached. So the service is not very exalted yet. Right, it's not very advanced level. Because you see, when a devotee becomes advanced, then they become very detached. Vairagya develops in the consciousness. Detachment develops in the consciousness. And jnana. But it doesn't mean ordinary jnana. It means realization of knowledge. It means vijnana. It means that the devotee has deep realizations about Krishna. All these things come when one is performing very serious devotional service. Now, if the devotional service is not so serious, then you will not get these kind of deeper realizations. So Kapila Dev is speaking about a very advanced level of devotional service, as we saw in the previous verse, bhava, right? With great feeling towards Krishna.
If a devotee performs the devotional service with a desire for the material opulences, that is fruitive activity. But if the devotee performs the devotional service with a desire for the liberation, is that still a fruitive activity? Or that's
no, that's one is karma misha, the other one is jnana misha. It says in the Bhagavatam, akama sarvakamo. So sarvakama means desiring fruitive things. And moksha karma means desiring liberation. So these are material desires. Desiring jnana or desiring karma. What that?
But in the Bhagavad Gita it's described that the desiring material opulences, devotion service performed for the material opulence is inauspicious, but performing the devotion service for liberation is auspicious. How to understand that?
Vaishnava liberation means to become a servant of Krishna in the spiritual world. That kind of liberation, to go to the spiritual world. That's auspicious, but pure devotional service does not ask for anything in return. Lord Chaitanya says, Bhagavad Bhaktiya, he says, Na Danam, Na Janam, Na Sundarim, Kavitam Ba Jagad Isha Kamiye. Mama Jamini Jamanishwari Jamanishwari. Jamini means birth after birth. Right? So that is a more pure type of devotional service. That one is not desiring even liberation. One only wants to be the Lord's servant. That's more pure. It's very exalted. I think so. Okay. And now Prabhupada says in the second paragraph that he says only bhakti will give one Brahma Darshana. Brahma Darshana means? Self-realization. I mean seeing Krishna face to face. You will not get this from other processes. Other processes do not grant you the ability to actually have realization of Krishna or to see your own swarup, your constitutional position. This is only given in devotional service, in bhakti. Jnana will take you to a certain level, and Ashtanga Yoga will take you to a certain level, but they need to be infused with bhakti or devotion to fully give you Brahma Darshana, which means actually understand your eternal relationship with Krishna. That is what is being pointed out here in the Bhagavatam. The whole point of the Bhagavatam is to establish our eternal relationship with Krishna, Bhava. At the level of Bhava, you understand your relationship with Krishna. That is the point of the Bhagavatam. That's what we are trying to reach or attain. That eternal relationship with Krishna. So only bhakti can allow you to understand Krishna and who you are in relation to Krishna. So this is what the Bhagavatam is pointing towards. This is the culmination of Lord Kapila's teachings. Therefore Prabhupada says Sankhya means bhakti. It's not different. It's just very intricate, that's all. It's not different. That's all.
Then what is the difference between self-realization and God-realization? Self-realization and God-realization.
Same thing, but one means to understand who you are in relation to God. And the other one means to understand who is God.
No difference.
No, same thing. Prabhupada says, when the sun comes up, you can see yourself and everyone around you. So when you realize Krishna, then you'll also realize yourself simultaneously. Prabhupada says God realization and self-realization happen simultaneously. So. Okay.
How about the Janus people? They realize they're not the bodies, but they don't realize their constitutional position against the Lord.
So what's the?
So
what
can will be defined to their realization of realization?
Well, it's realization of Brahman. That Prabhupada says the best they can get is Brahman realization. They realize Brahman, but they can't realize their swarup.
So in that case, doesn't mean that self-realization is equal to God-realization, only for devotees,
those who practice devotional service. Yeah, because they don't understand their swarup. They don't understand a form. They don't understand that they have a form or that God has a form. They think that everything is Brahman, just spirit, like that, so formless. Okay. The exalted devotee's mind becomes equipoised in sensory activities and he is transcendental to that which is agreeable and not agreeable. So Prabhupada points out in the purport that whether something is priya or apriya. Priya means agreeable. And apriya means disagreeable. Whether something is good or bad, that does not affect a devotee, because a devotee, Prabhupada points out in the purport, does not act for sense gratification. For the materialist, their whole life is about good or bad. Nice day, isn't it? That's all they talk about. What's good, what's bad. Oh, the cat's won. And St. Kilda lost. I don't know if they did or not, but that's all they talk about. What is good, what is bad. This is good, this is bad. Like that, but a devotee doesn't even care. Nice day, isn't it? For a devotee, it's always a nice day. Because every day we're serving Krishna. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. What to do? You do your service. So this is the realization that a self-realized soul has, because his consciousness becomes absorbed in Krishna on the transcendental platform. He's not concerned with what happens on this platform in the material world during this week, because we all have our tests in spiritual life. So I was going through a test in the last week, like that. Actually, every week's a test. You get a different one, but this week I had some tests. I was feeling it was some difficulty in I had to overcome, to try to overcome. So how do we overcome our difficulties in devotional service? What do we do? Pray to Krishna.
Pray harder.
Pray really, really hard. It's all good, but
get busy in sadhana.
Get busy in sadhana. Yeah, it's true. All these things are true. What I do is then I turn on the MP3. That's what I do. Because solace comes by hearing from guru, sadhu, by hearing the shastra. Okay. And then you get the answers. So I've been going on for several days and my mind was troubled and I was trying to work out, how do I solve this problem? How do I solve this problem? Like that. And then finally, Janani Vasprabhu came onto Radhanath Swami's parikram. And he came on and he began to speak about Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was the son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's the day after Bhaktivinoda Thakur's appearance. And Janani Vasprabhu was speaking about Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and Bhakti, he said that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said it is compulsory that we give up our attachment to the good and bad in this world. Right? It is compulsory. So it was like getting slapped on the head for me, because when I heard that, I got out of the shower, right, and I was putting on my deodorant, you know, and then suddenly, like this, wake up. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said through Janani Vasprabhu, it is compulsory that you give up your attachment to good and bad in this world. And Prabhupada says, actually, in this section here, he says there's no good in this world. Prabhupada actually says it in these purports. He said there's no good. He says only bad, because everything is mixed with the modes of nature. So how can it be good? Right? Everything is some problem in this world. you don't get any situation when there's no problem. You know, even like I'm living on, you know, New Nandagram, you know, beautiful, get up in the morning and the king parrots are there and the birds are there and the sun is shining and the moon, and my mind is completely troubled. You know, because there's something going on in my mind. You know, because I've got some problem I was dealing with during the week. So my mind was disturbed. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm here with all this, you know, everything's wonderful, but my mind's, I don't have peace. So this is the material world, right? And Prabhupada said it has to be bad. It can't be good. Because it's contaminated by the three modes of nature. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says it is compulsory that you become detached from the good and bad in this world if you want to transcend, if you want to go back to Godhead. Right? No choice. So then I got some realization. You know, I'm just getting on the mental platform. Right? Just because you're on the mental platform, you're thinking about the good and the bad. Oh, this is so bad. Oh, this is so good. You know, we get onto this mental platform. But Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said it is compulsory that you get off that platform, right? And get onto the transcendental platform. It's like one devotee was asking Prabhupada a question about the mind, and he said to Prabhupada, you can listen to the lecture at some like conversation, and he says to Prabhupada, what about the mind? And Prabhupada says, Well, Prabhupada wasn't even really listening. Prabhupada just says, And he says, what about the mind? You know, because, you know, our whole life is about the mind. Like, it's such a big thing, you know, our mind. Oh, you know. And Prabhupada said, Like that. And he said, Prabhupada, what about the mind? And Prabhupada said, what mind? What mind? You relate to that mind. That's why it is such a big thing for you. But what mind? Prabhupada said, Chan Hare Krishna. Transcend the mind. So it is compulsory that we have to go beyond this material conditioning, this material attachment that we have. So it says here that one who becomes absorbed in that spiritual dimension, he is not interested in the agreeable and the unagreeable. That is just temporary. Right? It has to be there. It's a material world. I know for me, I'm sentimental. You know, because I'm like a soft-hearted kind of guy and I'm all sentimental. I know what I'm like. I'm my conditioning. I'm like a sentiment. I like everything to be nice all the time. You know, why can't everyone just get along and let's all just hold hands and put a candle in the middle and just, you know, sing sweet songs and, you know. It's like everything has to be, but it's the material world. It can't be. Right? It just won't be. It doesn't matter what you want and everything to be nice. It's not going to be like that. That's the reality. Why? Because Prabhupada says it is contaminated, this world, by the modes. So therefore, it is compulsory that you give up your attachment to it. And don't be attached to everything being good here, because it cannot be good. Just like Brajabihari Prabhu, he said, Burajan Prabhu's disciple, he said one time, he said, my attachment is I like everyone to like me. Right? And as soon as someone doesn't like me, oh, my mind becomes so disturbed. But the nature of the material world is it doesn't matter what sort of a person you are, someone's always going to not like you. It doesn't matter who you are. Prabhupada even says for the pure devotees, they have enemies. Yeah, it doesn't matter who you are, someone's not going to like you. So you can't be attached to what's going on in this world. Just do your best. Try to be humble. Try to serve everyone. Try to be respectful to everyone. And then, you know, there's always going to be some problem anyway. So then what to do? So become detached and become fixed in Krishna. That's the point. That's it. You had a point?
Is it relating to the relating to us, then we see good and bad and this and that. But when we relate things to Krishna, then there is no good or bad. And whenever we have a problem, we should ask whatever happens to us, say what Krishna wants me to do here. What can I learn and what Krishna wants me to do here? That's all we can draw from the good or bad experiences in this world. And that's all.
So Prabhupada says, actually it's in this purport, Prabhupada says, everything is bad in this material world due to being contaminated by the three modes. So this is an important purport to read. If you haven't read it already, please read this purport. Because Prabhupada completely dismantles the material world. There's nothing good in this material world. It is always bad. Prabhupada says. And if you think it's good, then you just wait some time and then... And as you get older, as I said, I think I said a few months ago, then Danodar Swami, who was one of my Guru Maharaj's, Tamal Krishna Maharaj's very close friend of Burujan Prabhu and Tamal Krishna Maharaj, like that. Then he said he was giving a lecture, I was listening to one of his lectures, and he said that Tamal Krishna Maharaj said to me, before I left this world, he said, you know, in life, everyone tells you everything's going to get better. Yeah, everyone says, don't worry, everything will get better, like that. But he said, actually, it gets worse. You just stick around in this world, everything just gets worse, it doesn't get better. It just gets worse. Just, everything just becomes more and more problematic. Life doesn't get better, it just becomes more, you know. Until the Jyoti Shore lines up and everything will be nice, and then, you know. That time never comes.
Once someone asked Prabhupada to have a look at his hand, and he looked at his hand and he returned him back and he said, all bad. Because when you're on a material platform, even the good things, because it's actually under the gunas, it's like a dream. What's good of the dream if you have a big house? What's the good of the dream? But for devotees, even if you suffer, if there is any good, some good in it, like Queen Kunti was praying, please bring more suffering, because we can learn something and we progress actually even through bad things. So for devotees, even bad things they turn for good. But for karmis, even good things are bad.
Good point.
Sarga Apavarga Narayana Rakeshwa Apitulya Prakashana. Devotees. There is one verse which Maharaj was commenting yesterday in a lecture. It is I think Prahlad Maharaj talks about it. Narayana Parasarve Na Putaschana Vidyati Sarga Apavarga Narakeshwa Apitulya Prakashana. When he says that in this matter, devotees do not care for the good or bad things in this material world. Their only interest is in whether the Lord is pleased with my activities or not. Yesterday only I think I was hearing.
Yeah, there's like the
Swarga or Apavarga or any of these planets, it doesn't matter.
All the same. Yeah, that's the message of the Bhagavatam. Just like this verse that we're just about to read, same point. The exalted devotee. Now this is what Kapila Devi is. This is the culmination of the teachings that he's just given over all these chapters since chapter 25. He's saying that an exalted devotee's mind becomes equipoised in sensory activities and he is transcendental to that which is agreeable and not agreeable. So Prabhupada says in the very final lines of the purport, Prabhupada says, the conclusion is that an advanced devotee dovetails himself in the transcendental qualities of the Lord, and in that sense he becomes qualitatively one with the Supreme Personality of God. Did I already read that verse?
Yeah.
I already read that verse. Okay. That's why it didn't make any sense. Thank you for telling me. So now this verse, okay. Because of his transcendental intelligence, the pure devotee is equipoised in his vision and sees himself to be uncontaminated by matter. He does not see anything as superior or inferior, and he feels himself elevated to the transcendental platform of being equal in qualities with the Supreme Person. Now Prabhupada says at the end of the purport, for his personal interest there is nothing which is agreeable or disagreeable. Everything is done for the Lord, and therefore he is free from attachment and detachment. That is the transcendental stage of neutrality. So this is the transcendental stage of neutrality. A devotee is neutral. He's not concerned. It is good, it is bad. It doesn't bother the devotee. Devotee is only concerned with the serving Krishna. Why? And Prabhupada says, a pure devotee enjoys life in the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. That is the nature of the soul. The nature of the soul is Ananda Mayo Vyasad. He's always seeking after Ananda. But where is the Ananda to be found? The Ananda is found in the service of Krishna. When Krishna is happy, the devotee is happy. And the devotee is always happy and enjoying. Devotees are the most happy. Devotees are the most satisfied. They're always blissful. Why? Because they're serving Krishna, not interested in material things. Okay, now this verse, next verse is the final verse describing when Lord Kapila Devi is summarizing his teachings here. The Supreme Personality of Godhead alone is complete transcendental knowledge. But according to the different processes of understanding, he appears differently, either as impersonal Brahman, as Paramatma, as the personality of Godhead, or as the Purusha avatars. So, according to the process which one adopts, then one will realize the Lord differently. Some will realize the Lord as Brahman, some as Paramatma, some as Bhagavan. But the point is, as is being pointed out by Prabhupada in the second paragraph, that you cannot realize the Lord in any of the processes unless there is bhakti. They have to do some devotional service. They have to worship a deity. They have to perform some yajna. They have to do something which will constitute bhakti, even if their motive is impure. But it is the bhakti which carries them to their goal. Prabhupada makes this point. So bhakti is the all-powerful ingredient. It is the like the effective cause, or it is the element which makes all the other processes successful also. It is the bhakti which blesses them to become successful in their particular process. But it doesn't give them complete realization. Only when one becomes unadulterated in one's bhakti. It has to be pure bhakti. Pure bhakti means it has to be done with proper understanding, or the correct siddhanta, or proper knowledge. Just like so many people, they don't understand. You know, just like when people come to the temple for the first times and they, you know, they come out with so many speculative philosophies. You know, because they don't understand. Right? So they can do all the bhakti. They can come and they can offer, they can put money in the donation box and they can bring the deity gifts and they can pray and they can do all these things. But if they think they are Krishna, or if they think Krishna is the same as all the gods, you know, if they have all these misconceptions, even though the bhakti is there and they do the service, but they won't get the result. The result only comes when you have the proper knowledge. So therefore Prabhupada said the temple is an educational institution. Educational institution means we must educate the people who come here. Just like when we first got the Bhaktivedanta Manor in England, when we first got it, it was very no one virtually came. Now in Janmashtami, how many people did they have this time? 70,000 on Jamashtami. Yeah. We have like 7,000. You know, they have 70,000 just on Jamashtami, like that. So that's how big it's become now. But in the beginning, not very many people came. But one time, Prabhupada walked into the temple room, and Jananda Maharaj was there, and I think he was offering the aarti to the deity. Or he was in the temple room, and some Indian gentleman came in, and he offered his obeisances, but he was facing the wrong way. And Prabhupada said, you have to teach him. People come in, they offer their obeisances with their rear end to Prabhupada. That's not the system. The system is, you put your left side to the deity. That's the system. That's the point of the temple. It's an educational institution. We have to teach people how to worship Krishna properly. Just like, I'll make a point now, I'm not pointing out any one person in particular, because I see a lot of you doing it. You all put your pens in your mouths. Right? I watched during the lecture, I've been meaning to say this for months, like I haven't said it, but you all put your pen, it's moochy. Your mouth is contaminated. Right? Prabhupada said, contamination travels like electricity. Right? Then your pen's moochy. Right? Because your mouth's moochy, now your pen's moochy, now your hand's moochy. Now you're moochy, you're not clean, and you're touching your Bhagavatam and everything like that. It's not, don't put your pens in your mouths. Right? It's not suchi. Yeah, it's my fault. I should have said something months ago, but you know, so many people are doing it, I didn't want to, you know, I felt a little uncomfortable. But this is the point. Like that. Putting your pens in your mouths, or putting your hands in your mouths, or chewing your nails. Sometimes devotees sitting in the Bhagavatam class chewing their nails. It's like, it's moochy. Right? It's not suchi. Brahmana means suchi. It has to be clean, like that. So the temple is a training, educational institution. Just like I think in the weekend they had the deity worship seminars. This weekend coming. Okay, so they're having the deity worship seminars. That's what the temple is for, training. Because if you don't learn, you can't reach Krishna. Now, if you've got all these strange philosophies, all these strange practices, you can't reach Krishna. Prabhupada actually says, we've mentioned this before, Prabhupada says Krishna does not need an opulent offering. Krishna needs a clean kitchen. Prabhupada says that. And you'll learn this if you go on the weekend to these seminars. This is what the temple is meant to teach. How to approach Krishna. If you have some strange philosophy or some improper practice, you don't get to Krishna. Krishna requires a clean kitchen. Right? Everything should be suchi. Just like... they asked Prabhupada one time, they said, Prabhupada, I can't remember if it was cockroaches or mice, was one of them. And they said to Prabhupada, oh, there's cockroaches in the kitchen. Are we allowed to kill them? Prabhupada said, we should kill you. Because that means if they're there, that means the kitchen is dirty. Unless, you know, sometimes they come anyway. But the point is, Prabhupada is making this point. So this means that there has to be training. This is what the temple is for, to train people. What is the standard? Right? Then you can approach Krishna.
I know it's not proper, but to run after everyone and tell them, you know, what to do is also a bit awkward, you know, like run and tell everyone like you're the police in the, you know, in the temple. So what to do?
Well, you have to tell people. You just have to learn to tell nicely. What to do?
Is it maybe better to put a notice on the door how to pay obeisances and just basic things, you know, like
that's good.
Better than go run after everyone.
Good to have in the notice board. These things should be there.
And on the entrance on the door before they enter, you know, like at least.
Yeah, you can do something like that. That's good to do those things. But if we see it, we should correct it. That's the point. We have to teach people. Just like prasadam should not be honoured standing up. Everyone stands around the courtyard eating prasadam. Prasadam means you have to sit, take your shoes off. These are the injunctions when you take prasad. It's offence to stand or to have shoes on when you're taking prasad. Everyone just sits in the courtyard and just, you know, it's not proper. So many things gone, and they throw the prasad in the bin. That's an offence to Krishna. Throw it in the bin. You have to tell the people. You know, if you're not hungry, then don't ask for so much on your plate, or don't tell the people who are serving. Just say, you know, I just want a little bit. And the people who are serving should just give a little bit. Yeah, unless they want more, then you give more. If they're not going to eat it, then you know it's offensive. We have to teach people all these things. Okay. Okay, now text 27. Now, from text 27 onwards, I think to text 37 or so, I'll mention this tomorrow night, but we'll read up to 33 now. Now, Kapila Dev begins to summarize the different types of yoga which have been mentioned. Jnana yoga, Dhyana yoga, like this, Ashtanga yoga, like this, Bhakti. So there'll be like a summary of the processes. But you will see what will be Kapila Dev's conclusion. The conclusion is bhakti is the superior process. Like that. Those who are averse, the greatest common understanding for all yogis is complete detachment from matter, which can be achieved by different kinds of yoga. So, how do we get detached from matter? All the systems are about this. Bhakti is about getting detached from matter. Jnana is about getting detached from matter. Ashtanga is about getting detached. All of them teach the same thing, but the most effective way to do it is to use the senses in the service of Krishna. Because if you try to refrain from sense gratification, it's very difficult. The mind, Krishna says, third chapter of Gita, you are michacha. Right? Externally you put on renunciation, but internally you begin to meditate on the objects of the senses, cheating. Right? It's just hypocrisy like that. So therefore, the most effective way to control the senses, Prabhupada points out, is bhakti. Because the senses need engagement, but they need the higher taste. Right? They need something superior. Everyone likes to eat something. Yeah? But Prabhupada said, offer everything to Krishna, then take Krishna's prasad. Then you'll be satisfied. So that is our system. That's why bhakti is the superior system. Like that. Okay, verse 28. Those who are adverse to the transcendence realize the supreme absolute truth differently through speculative sense perception, and therefore, because of mistaken speculation, everything appears to them to be relative. So, for those who are averse to the transcendence, they realize the supreme absolute truth differently through speculative sense perception. But because of mistaken speculation, everything appears to them to be relative. So, for those who are following the impersonalistic path, who are not personalists, and as it says here, they may be averse to Krishna, and they may be envious of Krishna. And they are not following the personalistic conception, the impersonalists. For them, they say that all the different variety in this world, it is simply relative. It is false. Right? But as Prabhupada points out in the purport, Krishna and his energies are not different. This is the message of the Bhagavatam. It is not that everything is false. Right? The philosophy of the Bhagavatam is achincha, veda, veda, tattva. Everything is one with, but different from, Krishna. It is Krishna's energy. So it is not false, because it is Krishna's energy. But it is temporary, like that. But the materialists, or the impersonalists, they have a false conception that this material world is false. And you just have to realize it is false, and then come to the platform of Brahman realization, like that, and then everything will be understood. This is a defective perception. So Kapila Dev is pointing out these other processes, they're not effective. Only the bhakti process, this is the only effective process of realizing the absolute truth. Yeah, so. Text 29. From the total energy, the Mahatattva, I have manifested the false ego, the three modes of material nature, the five material elements, the individual consciousness, the 11 senses, and the material body. Similarly, the entire universe has come from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So everything is emanating from Krishna. The Prabhupada points out in the purport that Krishna is the life of the universe. He enters the Virat Rupa. And by his entering into the universe, the whole universe comes to life, it functions. And we are the life of our own little body, our own chetra. We are chetragya, which means we are the knower of the chetra, we're the soul. So we enter within this body. So we, by consciousness, we pervade this body. By consciousness, Krishna pervades the universe. So Prabhupada said, all the similarities are there, but there is a difference. Because we don't know what's going on Mars.
Actually, the scientists should read this book because they spent 20 years and 10,000 scientists and they tried to fuse some light and to get in, you know, to produce a big bang.
Big bang, yeah, recently there's been much talk
in Sweden.
Yes.
Have they done it yet?
They have.
They did it? What
it's
happened?
Not in one day.
It's not in one day.
20 years series of experiment for next.
Next few days. Okay.
When Roger India committed suicide, thinking the world is going to come to an end because of that experiment, there are so many rumors in India that it was suspected to create black holes in the star if it gets up.
Yeah, I'm worried about it.
Today I was reading the article written by Sankarsana Vijay. So he wrote that all the scientists are trying to experiment the Big Bang theory. So ask all those scientists to come and read the Bhagavatam. You will know all the answers, but you don't have to work so hard.
Very simple. So as Prabhupada is explaining here, that Krishna is the life of the entire universe. And it's very easy for us to understand that Krishna is the Param Atma, or the Supreme Soul. And we are the Jivatma. We are the Anu. Krishna is the Vipu. Krishna is unlimited. And we're very small. So this is the difference between us and Krishna. So for a devotee, we understand Prabhupada's explaining that we have all the same qualities as Krishna. Right? All the qualities that Krishna have, we also have in minute way. Not all the qualities, but many of the qualities. But Krishna is unlimited. That's the difference. It's important for devotees to understand this. This is what Kapila Devi is summarizing. This perfect knowledge can be achieved by a person who is already engaged in devotional service with faith, steadiness, and full detachment, and who is always absorbed in thought of the Supreme. He is aloof from material association. My dear, respectful mother, I've already described the path of understanding the absolute truth by which one can come to understand the real truth of matter and spirit and their relationship. Philosophical research culminates in understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After achieving this understanding, when one becomes free from the material modes of nature, he attains the stage of devotional service. Either by devotional service directly or by philosophical research, one has to find the same destination, which is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, as Prabhupada has mentioned already in this section, that the path of jnana and the path of bhakti have the same goal at the end, which is to realize Krishna. But Prabhupada points out, quoting the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the path of jnana is very difficult. It is troublesome. It's not easy to realize Krishna by following that path. There's a great deal of austerity. Whereas, Prabhupada says, the path of bhakti is very easy. And in the songbook of the Vaishnava Acharyas, Srila Prabhupada says that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's method of God realization is easy. Simply dance, chant, and feast. And you can go back to Godhead in this lifetime. Very simple process. I was listening to Radhana Swami today speaking about Mahaprabhu manifesting one tree in Sridham Mayapur. And the tree grew. And the mangoes were so big on the tree, they could each mango could fill 12 men. And the mango had no seed and no skin. And those mangoes were so satisfying that each devotee could only eat one of them. And the festival went on for 1 year. Every day they would have kirtan and they would go and take mangoes from that tree. And that's the process of, that's self-realization. That's Mahaprabhu's process. Dance and chant. When you're feeling fatigued, take prasad, then go back and dance and chant. Murari Chaitanya Prabhu, my godbrother. You know Murari Chaitanya?
Yeah,
my godbrother. Yeah, he lives in Brisbane now. He was a head pujari here for many years. He came from Philippines. And he said that Filipino devotees are very famous for kirtan. And he said on the Sunday feast kirtan, when in the 80s when he joined, he said the Sunday feast kirtan would go for 4 hours every Sunday. And because the Philippines are so tropical and hot, he said they would do kirtan, you know, playing ridangas and like that. And he said after 2 hours everyone was just dripping wet, like you'd been in the shower. So what they used to do, they'd take it in turns, they'd go to the shower, right? Take off their dhotis, their kurtas, take bath, put on fresh, then come back. And then after another 2 hours, I'd be totally soaked again. So everyone would go to take bath and then come back. That's our process. And then when you're tired, then have prasad. That's it. That was the whole process. Right? Go back to Godhead in this lifetime. Simple. Right? Or else you can sit in the Himalayas, right? Track some ice, get into the Ganga, right? Perform your austerities like that. That is the path of jnana. They're very difficult like that. We're lucky we don't have to have this kind of austerity. Okay, in the final verse. A single object is appreciated differently by different senses due to its having different qualities. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is one, but according to different scriptural injunctions, he appears to be different. So Prabhupada points out, quoting Rupa Goswami, that the pleasure which is given from bhakti cannot be compared to the pleasure which is given from realizing Brahman. It says that if you take Rupa Goswami says the pleasure of realizing Brahman, if you take one drop from the ocean of the nectar of devotion, you take one drop and you take a fragment of that drop of the nectar of devotion, the ocean of the nectar of devotion, that fragment of that drop cannot compare impersonal, the pleasure of impersonal realization or Brahman realization cannot compare, all of that pleasure cannot compare to even a fragment of the drop of the ocean of the nectar of devotion. So there's no comparison like that. The real pleasure is in the spiritual world, serving Radha and Krishna. So we'll stop here, and tomorrow night we'll finish chapter 32. So this means that at the end of chapter 33, which has only been a few weeks, then we will summarize the chapters and we'll set the date for the exam in the next few weeks, and then we will sit the exam. So it means that all of the oral presentations and the open book exams are due by the 1st of October, which is 2 weeks from now. Like that. So 2 weeks from now, then all your open book examinations, your essays and your oral presentations should be completed. Is there anyone who hasn't finished the exam from the previous time? Boogie Boo and Sean. And I think Usha hasn't done it either.
Shekhar Babu as well.
And Shekhar. Can you all of you do it in the next 2 weeks? Because this has been, you know, I mean, we sat that other exam ages ago, like that, months ago. So I need that those ones finished as well, because I have to mark all of the exams before I go to India.
I think Usha Madani has gone to India.
So she can't do it.
So... I don't know what date she's coming back.
So can you organise it at least? You do your ones like that, and then Shekhar, if you want to speak to him, see if he wants to do it, because I need all of these exams handed in, because I want to mark everything before I go to India like that. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.